Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? Do people say stuff like that?
I apologize for him.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not saying this is a good idea. I'm just saying if we needed a new national anthem, this is it.
When people write their songs of love, they write of one another. It's always sis or mom, pa, sweetheart or a brother. But love songs that they've aimed at me have all gone on the shelf. I don't think that is fair, so now I'll write one of myself. I love me, I love me, I love myself to death.
Told ya.
I love me, till I'm all out of breath. I stop at every slot machine that I should chance to pass, and give myself a hug and squeeze as I look in the glass.
This is Wretched Radio. I love me some me. This isn't an entirely new American sentiment. That has always been in the heart of every human. We tend to prefer ourselves more than anyone else, but wow, has it grown intense. Courtesy of the last couple of hundred years, really, of worldly philosophies, liberal Protestantism, Oprah Winfrey, postmodernism have all conspired, whether it was organized or not. I don't need a black helicopter for this theory. The reality is academia, religion, philosophy, Hollywood, music are all singing off the same song sheet. I love me.
Oh, I love me. I love me. I'm wild about sweet me. I love me, only me, so I'm content, you see.
By the way, that's Billy, not Bill. Billy Murray. He recorded that somewhere between 1922 and 1925. Hey, we don't know the exact date. That must not be real. Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking like a skeptical atheist. He wrote this song 100 years ago, or at least sang it, and it has never been more poignant. Why? Because we are not just built with a bent toward loving self. The world, it acts like a bellows, just whoosh, 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 love you. Love, you are the most important thing in the world. Love you, 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 you. And wow, are we seeing the effects of that today? This is why words are weapons. If you say something that I disagree with, you are violating me. You're not loving me, it's hate speech. And therefore, you've committed a crime if you disagree with me in any way, shape, or form. How bad is it? Well, I'm glad you asked. An article from Not The Bee, from Veg Out, V-E-G Out, Veg Out. 7 phrases boomers use as praise that Gen Z automatically interprets as criticism. We've got ourselves a generational divide, don't we? So the boomers, that would be, what is it, 50 and up? Something like that? Jimmy, something? Yeah. Are you a boomer?
Maybe. I could be.
What do you self-identify as? You can, you know what? Hey. If you think you're Gen Z, then you're Gen Z.
Whatever I am, Todd.
You know what? If you want to think that you're not even born yet, that's fine.
Listen, whatever I am, I love me.
Oh, wait, hold on. Why didn't you tell me that was coming?
With me, I like to make a date to meet myself at 8:30. If I'm not there, I never wait. I'm wild about myself.
So whatever the boomers, they're the older people. The Gen Zers, they're the whippersnappers. So Gen Z apparently hears, you're so articulate, and thinks that the speaker has low expectations to begin with. Oh, we just meant that you're above average in that area. No, it's heard differently. It's heard as actually more of a hack than it is a compliment. You clean up nicely. That phrase suggests their everyday appearance is somehow lacking or unprofessional and feels like a judgment on their regular choices, which is funny because I actually use that as kind of a pretty much an evergreen joke. So Jimmy, what did you think about yesterday's program? It was pretty good.
It was pretty good, Todd.
Well, what was wrong with all the other ones? For me, it's a joke. Apparently, if you are Gen Z, it's an insult. This is from Not the Bee. You're so tech savvy. which we've all said to the Gen Zers, haven't we? Because they are. It's just so intuitive for them. Gen Z grew up with technology. And so being called tech savvy for basic computer skills is like being complimented for knowing how to use a fork. Okie dokie then. Some other phrases. You're mature for your age. You're not like other millennials or Gen Zers. Back in my day, we would have been grateful for that. And here's, this is amazing. Good for you. They didn't explain how that's somehow a slight, but apparently saying nice things to Gen Zers is actually perceived as being a critique. I think this must be related to deconstructionism. I think this has to be related to CRT, reading between the lines. I know you said that, but what you really meant, or the subtext is, or between the lines, that's what you're really trying to say. They're steeped in that. Interpreting literature, not for what it says, but for what it doesn't say. This is a generation that has grown up being told, here it comes, Jimmy. I love me. Sing along, everybody.
I love me, every place I go. I love me, and at a movie show. I take myself right by my arm and push me through the crowd. And listen to myself read me the titles right out loud.
Okay, this is kind of crossing the line into creepy, I'm thinking. Every generation loves me. Not me, but they love themselves. But it seems more so than ever. And we need to understand this generation. And maybe, just maybe, a little something that I heard. This just got downloaded in my feed on the YouTube machine. I thought, this helps a little bit. This helps. Because we grew up in a different era. And it forms you. And it shapes you. And it maybe makes it hard to understand the next generation. This video is called Psychology of People Who Grew Up in the 1980s. It's not an endorsement of psychology. It's just the mindset of people who grew up in a different generation.
You survived a childhood that would get parents arrested today. They didn't break you. They built you. Your brain developed during a unique window in history. And psychologists are only now beginning to understand what made growing up in the 80s wire you so differently from anyone raised today. The first trait is something psychologists call hardwired confidence, or what I like to call a built-to-win mindset. And this one is unique to the 80s. Think about the world you absorbed as a child. The Cold War was ending, the economy was booming, Rocky won, the Goonies never said die, every song on the radio told you to fight for your right, to take on the world, to not stop believing. The entire cultural atmosphere told you one thing: you can win this. This is why the modern doom scroll era feels so alien to you. Your baseline programming is hope. You grew up fearless because the world told you there was something worth being fearless for. The second trait ties directly to that booming economy. You have what researchers call latchkey autonomy, which to you looks more like home alone independence. The same prosperity that made the future feel bright had both your parents at work, which meant you came home to an empty house, made your own snacks, did your homework or didn't, and figured out your afternoon without a single adult watching. Children who experienced regular unsupervised time developed stronger internal motivation and better decision making. Nobody was structuring your time. Nobody was checking your progress. Nobody was telling you what to do next. You had to develop your own internal compass, which you still use today. This is why you can plan, adapt, and execute without external validation. You were trained to be untouchable, operating beyond supervision before you even understood what that meant. The third trait is what researchers call an effort equals reward mindset, and it shaped everything about how you experience satisfaction. You wanted to play a video game? You saved coins for weeks, then rode your bike to the arcade. You wanted to hear your favorite song? You sat by the radio for hours, finger on the record button, waiting. You wanted to watch a film? You physically went to the rental shop, hoping it wasn't already taken. Studies on reward anticipation show that people who grew up with delayed effort-based rewards developed stronger dopamine regulation and impulse control. Mm. Your brain learned that good things come to those who work and wait, not to those who click. This is why instant gratification feels hollow to you. Your reward system was built for the chase, not just the catch. You were unstoppable when you wanted something because you knew exactly what it cost to get it.
That is but one difference between the prior generations and our current generations. And yet there is another manifestation from Gen Zs and millennials that is one that is rather personal for all of us that we would do well to understand. Gentle parenting. Next on Wretched Radio.
So we decided to run the gospel through a focus group, and they loved the part about love. Then came the notes. Sin? Well, it sounds a little bit harsh. Hell? Well, that's a big negative. Saying Jesus is the only way? Well, that's just intolerant. We thanked them for their time and kept the message. If you're done rounding off the edges, Witness Wednesday here at Wretched Radio will help you share the real gospel. You can listen to your heart's content at fortisplus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes, and there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. So here's a question. Who's teaching your son what it means to be a man? Is it TikTok? His football coach? Some guy on a podcast who thinks masculinity means to never apologize? Well, here's the problem. Culture keeps handing men two options. Be a doormat or be a bulldozer. And that's why we created Gentle Man, a brand new video series with Todd Friel and Dr. John Krotz. New episodes are dropping every Monday on Fortis Plus. So download the Fortis Plus app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org. You know what's crazy? You've got more computing power in your pocket right now than NASA used to send people to the moon. But most of us, well, we're using it to watch cat videos or argue with strangers online. But what if I told you there's a better way? The Fortis Plus app. I'm talking hundreds of hours of biblical content that'll actually make you smarter and more equipped for the battles you're facing every day. Look, you're going to scroll through something today anyway. Why not make it something that actually strengthens your faith? Download the Fortis Plus app right now, wherever it is you download your apps from. Fortis Plus at fortisplus.org. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a lot of ministries talk to individuals, and that's fine. But somewhere along the way, the local church gets forgotten. And we believe that to be a big problem. And that's why we exist at Fortis Institute. We're not trying to be your church. As a matter of fact, we're always pointing to your local church. And if that mission is something that resonates with you, would you consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner? We know you have questions about what that would look like in your life, and we've got answers at fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Important dates in Christian history. 1906. The Azusa Street Revival in Los Angeles, California, launches Pentecostalism and paves the way for the development of the modern charismatic movement. Pentecostalism is marked by a focus on supernatural gifts such as healing and speaking in tongues. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The bigger the number, the smaller the hit. No, it's backwards. The smaller the number, there's so much for my Casey Kasem impersonation. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, I'm going to play Request Guy. I've got two sound bites pulled up. Okay. I could continue playing the psychology of people who grew up in the 80s. Okay. Was that somewhat clarifying for you?
Very much so.
I thought so too. It's like, okay, we just had different influences. We had different surroundings. That might help us a little bit. I don't think it gives anybody a pass when it comes to sinful behavior, but I do think it helps us to understand why it is that these upcoming generations, they are different. And I do think socioeconomic has a lot to do with it, because so many of the helicopter parents these days, they want it better for their kids. And that's like a good thing. But it's gone to the extreme of, we don't let our kids ever get their hands dirty. We don't ever make our kids do anything. And I've seen this, and we've all got this propensity. But I also hear the excuses that parents frequently use to keep their kids from having to do something hard. Well, if I let them do it, I'm going to have to supervise it. I'm just going to have to go back and redo it, so I'll do it myself. Not helpful. We got to let our kids do stuff. That used to be the way that kids were raised. It was just different. And you and I really had nothing to do with that. We have a propensity, I think, to look back like, you know, when we grew up, as if we were the ones who created that environment. No, we were born into it. And it helped to shape us. So, Jimmy, we can hear the fourth trait that makes you different from millennials, or we can listen to your new favorite song.
Oh, I love me. I love me. I love to squeeze my head.
Yeah.
What did he just say? I love to do what to my head? I'm getting creeped out now.
Read me the titles right out loud. Oh, I love me. I love me. I love to squeeze my head.
I love to squeeze my head?
I think he said hand.
Are you sure?
Like he holds his own hand? I don't know. I'm going
to
look it up.
I love me. I love to squeeze my head.
Head. I think he said head.
Okay.
What's up with this?
This guy's weird.
This took a turn to creepy, man.
I love me. I love me. It always feels so grand. With me, I get right in my tub. I let myself give me a rub.
Oh, yep. This got creepy. This guy. Okay. So now we've answered the question. We're not going to listen to that. We're listening to this.
The fourth trait goes deeper, and it explains why you seem almost unshakable in situations that send others into panic. Researchers call it physical world confidence. You grew up when everything was tangible. You owned things, tapes, records, posters, collections. When something broke, it was gone. When you lent something out, you might never see it again. You learned the weight of real loss and real value, not just digital files that live in a cloud somewhere. But it went beyond possessions. You navigated the physical world without GPS, without Google, and without a parent tracking your location. You learned that you could figure things out because you had to. And that confidence doesn't disappear, is in your bones. The fifth trait is truly fascinating. You have what psychologists call presence capacity, the ability to be fully in the room. The 80s were the last decade before everything became content. You weren't documenting moments. You weren't optimizing experiences for an audience. You were just there, fully in it, because there was no reason to be anywhere else. You experienced life undistracted by digital noise, which meant you got to experience life on a deeper level, with more accessible and vivid memories. You weren't splitting attention between living and recording. You were completely present. That presence became permanent. It's why you can wait without anxiety. It's why you don't need constant stimulation. Your brain was trained in a world that demanded your full attention, and that's still how it operates. Every time you look at today's world and feel like an outsider, remember this. You're not outdated. You're carrying strong capabilities that are becoming extinct. The self-reliance that looks like stubbornness, that's competence. You were raised on freedom, but never lost. After growing up in the 80s, it makes sense that you feel like you're on a different planet now, because you are.
That was insightful. That was from When Jekyll Meets Hyde, a manifestation of the worldview that says the self is supreme above all things. And if you're going to love anybody, you got to love yourself, because you're you and you're the center of the universe. And for anybody to disagree with you, to reprimand you, or to, discipline you, let alone spank you, forget about it. That can't be abided with this generation. And so it is, we have this new trend, relatively new trend, called gentle parenting. Read an article in Maclean's where a woman who had been trying gentle parenting for years came to the conclusion, this ain't working. So if you are younger, you're Gen Z or millennial, give this your attention, please. Raising kids will, how your parenting style will determine how they go about the business of coping for decades to come. Because parenting has changed. You know the gentle parenting trend. You hear it in the store all the time. Go to Costco. Hi, hi, hi. The kids screaming at their parent, just screaming. And I walk by them, no tears, just screaming. And mom and dad are like, boop, boop. Not paying any attention. Why? Well, because you can't tell them to knock it off, because that's not gentle. And it's going to harm their psyche. And we just need to let them express themselves. From the Maclean's article, for a young woman who, well, learned it doesn't work. Had all my validation and empathy truly helped my kids manage their emotions? Or had it taught them every impulse should be up for negotiation? Had my refusal to impose firmer boundaries deepened our connection or eroded their ability to handle limits? And had I become a better parent or simply invisible in my own family? So she did some questioning because she couldn't get the kids to do anything. They were getting bigger and she couldn't talk them down. She couldn't, hey, what about this for an hour? It just wasn't working. Quote, I realized I was worn out from doing what didn't come naturally. I didn't need to work through every tiny decision and disappointment with my children. Kids are fundamentally irrational creatures. Affirming their feelings, important, but preschoolers aren't exactly known for making evidence-based decisions. I realized I'd given the kids too much control, which created a different sort of instability. There's a large body of research showing that too much autonomy can make kids anxious. Because they're not meant to be autonomous. They're meant to be parented. They can't make all of these decisions. They can't carry that load. They want boundaries. Ooh, that word. I didn't think we could use that like this. They want boundaries and they want them enforced. One memory sticks out for me. I once told my eldest son no repeatedly after he asked for something, only to eventually give in to his nagging. To my surprise, he looked at me almost with disappointment and said, but you said no. He wasn't being bratty. He'd been testing whether the limit was real. The most loving thing I could have done was stick to the boundary I'd imposed. Kids want it. They know that they're loved. A kid who is able to just do whatever they want to do has to wonder, why don't my parents care for me? Why aren't they taking care? Why aren't they protecting me? She writes, as a social worker and a therapist focused on parenting, I see exhausted mothers all the time in my practice, overwhelmed by the pressures of gentle parenting. An American study recently found that a third of surveyed parents who identified as gentle reported feelings of burnout and uncertainty. And all too often, parents cope with that exhaustion by giving in. When that happens, gentle parenting becomes what critics call permissive parenting, in which the child's whims dictate family life and adults tiptoe around their volatile moods. If only there were a book that had this discovery like 2,000 years ago. If only there were a book that said, oh, if you love your child, you will, I'm going to use the word, spank them. It communicates love to them. The Bible had that was a proverb that was 3,000 years old. If you don't discipline your child, you hate your child. And guess what? Your kid knows it because it's a truism. From the article, it concludes, that's what happened to us. I softened every no and negotiated every boundary until my son learned he could wear me down. He pushed, I bent. I began to worry what it meant for a generation of kids never to hear no in a meaningful way, to grow up expecting the world to adjust to their desires at every turn. Well, I think we've got the evidence. You can't even compliment a child without them being offended, because they have grown up in a culture, in an environment where they were never instructed, they were never corrected. They were indeed bubble wrapped. What do we do with this? Well, Mom and Dad, I think it's rather obvious. Parent biblically, not trendily. And church, we can help them. We can help them. And we can start treating kids not the way that we were treated or necessarily the way that we grow up, but the way that the Bible says, and I would summarize it like this: we don't raise children, we raise adults. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.